So, hello, everyone. I was having a conversation with Kevin just before we started. I see you got my message, Kevin. So I'll give the talk. Me and my friend Kevin were trying to work out some glitches with YouTube Live and all that, but we'll work that out later. But Kevin, if you can send me a chat, if you can, just do it, just so I know that part of this thing is working. Let me get going. Today's talk is on the Kalama Sutta, and this is one of the, I think one of the most important suttas, although the Buddha gave many important suttas. And it's one that is very, very widely misunderstood and misapplied. And it's partially this sutta and partially the way the Buddha answered some other questions. That this whole notion that the Buddha taught that that we should question everything, meaning under the umbrella of Buddhism, that everything should be questioned. And of course, there's nothing is further from the truth. It just doesn't even make sense that the Buddha would have taught a very specific Dhamma for the last 45 years of his life and then encourage people to question the Dhamma itself. Of course, that's not what he meant. And let me read some of the sutta, and I'll have a few comments about this. In the Kalama Sutta, this is an article that's on my website as well. In the Kalama Sutta, the Buddha addresses greed, aversion, and deluded thinking directly as a way of pointing out how other teachings fail to directly address the defilements and in many cases inadvertently promote deluded thinking and deluded behavior. The Buddha then uses the qualities of generosity, non-clinging, and a well-concentrated mindfulness developed through the Eightfold Path as the framework for Dhamma practice. The Buddha points out that through the framework of the Eightfold Path, one becomes, his words, mindful and imbued with equanimity, free of ill will, undefiled and pure. And of course, what he's describing is the mind and the behavior of an awakened, fully mature human being. The Buddha consistently presented the Four Noble Truths in the Eightfold Path as unique and distinct, not as a common teaching that could be integrated into other teachings, according to the hardened beliefs of individuals. In fact, you could really say that everything the Buddha taught was to overcome conditioned thinking and conditioned views. And this notion of questioning everything is just a way of trying to fit and pick and choose what aspects of the Dhamma you want to use and that will support your conditioned views rather than recognizing them and abandoning those views that can only lead to confusion, delusion, and ongoing suffering. So let me continue. It is the insistence that the Buddhist teachings can and should be accommodated to individual and cultural beliefs that has resulted in a confusing and ineffective and an almost endless list of contradictory so-called dharmas. He instructed the Kalamas to not go by others' accounts or by legends or traditions, do not follow scriptures, meaning later developed texts, or logical conjecture, meaning conditioned thinking. Do not form conclusions through inference, analogies, or common agreement. And that last is so important. There's so much emphasis rationalization and justification for other teachings simply by saying, well, there's so many people that are practicing it. One of the most prevalent forms of modern Buddhism is Pure Land Buddhism. In fact, it may be the largest. And there is nothing in that form of Buddhism that the Buddha taught. And I don't mean to offend Pure Land Buddhists. And if they believe otherwise, that's fine. But you can find no reference to simply chanting your way to a type of Buddhist heaven or Amitabha or getting the assistance of Amitabha Buddha to protect you. There's just simply no reference to it. And again, that contradicts what the Buddha taught. Not putting it down. So the Kalama Sutta. The Buddha was walking with a large group of his Sangha. They arrived at Kesaputta, the town of the Kalamas. The Kalamas have heard that the Buddha was an awakened human being who teaches a complete path that is admirable in the beginning, in the middle, and in its conclusion. It just means what that means, and there's a reference to that. It's a useful Dhamma in the beginning, in the middle, and in its conclusion means that the entire path can be engaged with. It's not something that we that has anything added to it. The Kalamas went to the Buddha and told him of the many teachers that come through their town, all claiming to have taught the one true Dhamma, while ridiculing other teachers and their teachings. They asked, how are we to know which is useful, which is a useful and effective Dhamma, and which is not? The Kalamas were on a very important trade route, so all the spiritual teachers of the time passed through there, and every time they passed through, they insisted that theirs was the one true Dharma, or one true teaching, and that they should follow them, and them exclusively. And so as each teacher passed through, the Kalamas simply got more and more confused. And then they heard of the Buddha, and they asked him that question. So the Buddha responds, of course you are uncertain and filled with doubt. When there are reasons or doubt, uncertainty will follow. Do not go by reports or legends or traditions or scriptures or conjecture or inference or analogies or common agreement or unexamined loyalty. That last is so important. I hear so often that, well, this is the lineage that I follow, and this is what the teacher taught, so I have to follow that blindly. This even goes back into this whole idea of guru worship, in that you should never question your guru on anything, especially if it's within a Buddhist lineage. And even the Buddha, and this is where some misunderstanding came about. The Buddha always said, "Question me." But this was when he was alive. He said this. If you have a question or you're confused about the Dhamma, come to me and ask me directly. Of course, we can't do that anymore, but we still have the written record that we can look at. The Buddha continues, when you know from your own experience that the qualities taught are unskillful, shameful, confusing, and distracting, these teachings should be abandoned. When these teachings are criticized by the wise, they should be abandoned. When these teachings lead to harm and suffering, they should be abandoned. There's so much. This may end up being a long talk today. I hope you all have time. There is so much. There's been quite a few scandals in the West and since Buddhism started moving to the West, and I'm not just talking about in the last 20 or 30 years, but certainly it's been exaggerated. But even going back to the late 1800s, but most specifically, and I won't name the specific Buddhist school, but we've had teachers that have justified using sex with young people and even pedophilia as a way of saying that we're deconditioning people's thinking against homosexuality and all kinds of different things. That's just outrageous. We've had teachers that presented the Dhamma while, and everybody knew that they were drunk. These teachers were married and they slept with their students. And this types of behavior, and I'm talking about two very specific lineages here, but there's many others. And inadvertently, that's not the right word. Well, I suppose it is inadvertently, but their students, many of their students would then justify the outrageous behavior, which the Buddha is talking about here, this hurtful behavior, because they have elevated these very unskillful teachers to this guru mentality, or that these people are imbued with crazy wisdom, and that allows them to act in these hurtful ways, when these hurtful ways are completely contradict exactly what the Buddha taught. So again, this teaching that the Buddha gave 2,600 years ago is so important, and it's so relevant today, because there's still so much abuse taking place in so-called Buddha sanghas. So the Buddha continues, and excuse the rant, please, but it's so hurtful today that this continues, and there's still justification for this behavior when there is no justification. Again, just to go on a little bit longer, I read a response by one of these teachers who's founded a big, major Buddhist organization worldwide. This gentleman is in his 90s now, still alive, and they're still making excuses for him. And in this this acceptance of responsibility, he still blamed the victims and he still excused his behavior by saying that he was only trying to help. And when you're a member of that Sangha and you continue to excuse away that behavior, you're nearly as guilty as he is. And you really should question anybody that has that claims to be a Buddhist teacher and can't even manage their own lives. What could they possibly be teaching that is of any value, no matter what you call it? So again, this is an important subject, even more so today than it was during the Buddha's time. So the Buddha continues. What do you think, Kalamas? When the three defilements of greed, aversion, and deluded thinking arise in a person, do they arise for benefit or for harm? And of course it's for harm. The Buddha says, defilements always bring harm. So if you're following a teacher who hasn't mastered the cessation of greed, aversion, and delusion, he's likely not teaching anything that the Buddha ever taught. And so engage with that at your own peril. And what the Buddha continues, and when a person is driven by the defilements their mind possessed, they kill other beings. They take what is not given. And think about how that relates to using sex as a teaching tool. Or even taking people's time when they're trying to listen to a Dhamma teaching and you're under the influence of drugs and alcohol. One of the most famous modern teachers used to revel in that, and his students would marvel that he's able to give Dhamma teachings while he's drunk. And of course, that's not an authentic teaching. It can't be. And when a person is driven by the defilements, their mind possessed, they kill other beings, they take what is not given, they take another spouse. The Buddha is talking directly to what has occurred so many times over the last 2,600 years. The Buddha wasn't a prophet, but he's certainly prophetic here. They take another spouse, they lie and induce others to lie. Think about what's happening in many of these misguided sanghas. All of which create long-term harm and suffering for themselves and others. You think of all the deluded people that continue their delusion because they're so conditioned to believe that their particular lineage is somehow authentic simply because they believe it. And ignoring, you know, ignorance can insist on continued ignorance to continue ignorance. I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's just what people are doing when they insist that somehow their teacher or their lineage is above simple morals and continue to do that. And everybody that's touched by them is then harmed. So the Buddha continues, what do you think, Kalamas? Are these defilements skillful or unskillful, shameful or shameless, criticized or praised by the wise? The defilements are unskillful, shameful, and criticized by the wise, the Kalamas answer. When the defilements are acted upon, do they lead to long-term suffering for oneself or others, or not? They always lead to long-term suffering for oneself and others. So again, I'm going to bring that back to the setting that this was originally given in. The Buddha is talking to these to the Kalamas, answering that question. And what he's saying is to look at the results of these other dharmas, what have they developed in other people, and then experience it for yourself and see what it brings for you. So the Buddha continues, so as I said, do not go by reports or legends or traditions or scripture or conjecture or inference or analogies or common agreement or unexamined loyalty. Boy, that last one is so important today. When you know from your own experience that the qualities taught are unskillful, shameful, confusing, and distracting, these teachings should be abandoned. When these teachings are criticized by the wise, they should be abandoned. When these teachings lead to harm and suffering, they should be abandoned. And of course, that's what's happened over time, and certainly it's going on today. There's even reports, I mentioned this 90-year-old teacher, who gave this very poor acceptance of responsibility. A young man killed himself because of the abuse that he suffered. And this gentleman couldn't even mention that in his response, in his acceptance. It wasn't really an acceptance of responsibility. And as a movement, the entire Sangha continues to excuse this behavior. Now do not go by reports or legends or traditions or scripture or conjecture or inference or analogies or common agreement or unexamined loyalty. I just wanted to read that again. When you know from your own experience that the qualities taught are skillful, shameless, unambiguous, and direct, these teachings should be developed. When these teachings are praised by the wise, they should be developed. When these teachings lead to unbinding and calm, they should be developed. What do you think, Kalamas, when the defilements do not arise in a person, is this for their long-term welfare and happiness and for others' long-term welfare and happiness? Of course, it's for everyone's long-term welfare and happiness, the Kalamas responded. The Buddha continues, and this person, free of the defilements, does not kill living beings or take what is not given or take another's spouse or lie or induce others to lie. The Buddha is clearly teaching how to understand if the Dhamma that someone's teaching or if the teacher is authentic or even worth following. It's so clear and direct. Now, he was talking to the Kalamas about teachers of his time, but it's just as accurate today, and it's just as useful as in deciding what type of Dharma or Dhamma are you going to turn your life over to, because that's really what we're talking about. So what do you think? Are these qualities skillful, shameless, and praised by the wise? They are, sir, the Kalamas answer. When developed and acted on, they bring long-term welfare and happiness to oneself and to others. So now, Kalamas, one who follows the Dhamma, free of greed, aversion, or deluded thinking, alert and mindful of the path, experiences their life imbued with goodwill. Everywhere they go, their mindfulness is imbued with goodwill, with gratitude, with a mind resting in equanimity. They are abundant and free from all agitation towards themselves and all humanity. So again, what a skillful way to understand if the Dhamma that you're following is a useful Dhamma. Look at the teachers and look at what their followers are actually practicing and engaging in. Does it bring a calm and peaceful mind, or does it bring further craving, further clinging, and even predatory behavior? When Buddha continues, when one follows the Eightfold Path, free from greed, aversion, and deluded thinking, undefiled and pure, there are four qualities they will naturally develop. And this is a good way to gauge if something is really a true Dhamma practice. But really, the only way you have to gauge that is to understand that the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path. He taught Four Noble Truths, and he never taught anything else. And for the 45 years of his teaching career, everything he taught was in the context of the Four Noble Truths. So number one, they will give rise to pleasant experiences in the present. They will give rise to pleasant experiences in the future. And this isn't talking about future lifetimes. It's talking about the next moment and the next day and the next week of our lives. We can tell very quickly and clearly if we're practicing an effective Dhamma simply by the results. But of course, we have to know how to practice the Dhamma. Number three, if harm is done with no intention, no suffering will touch them. So again, that certainly belies this teacher that brought about suicide from one of his so-called students. Number four, if they remain harmless, then they can know that they are pure and no suffering will touch them. And that talks about the responsibility of a teacher and how they conduct themselves in their teachings and their interactions with their students. These are the four qualities naturally developed in one free of the defilements, from following the Dhamma. The Kalamas respond, great teacher, you have shown a way to those who are lost. Through clear reasoning, you have made the Dhamma clear and taught us how to know a true Dhamma. We take refuge in you, the great teacher, in your Dhamma, and in your Sangha. Please remember from this day forward, we have taken refuge. That's the end of the sutta. And that last line, it brings me to tears. It's so poignant in that they are saying that they're taking refuge. They're engaging in the three refuges because, I don't want to announce what this other lineage is in a public forum. But if we're taking true refuge in the triple jewels, in the three refuges, we talked about this in class last night too. We're taking refuge in the example that a human being the Buddha showed for 45 years. We're taking refuge in his Dhamma and no other. That's what it means to take refuge in his Dhamma. And we take refuge in a true and authentic Sangha that actually follows the Buddha's teaching. And that's so important too. If we really believe that we're taking refuge in the Sangha has to be an authentic Sangha, doesn't it? Again, that's so important. It's so easy. I have members of my own, and Kevin, I know Kevin's online, member of our Sangha. Again, I won't point them out, but there's a few. And not one that I've referenced, but another local, somewhat local Sangha. He wasn't directly abused, but the suffering that it caused in his mind when he realized what was going on there, he still feels the effects. Both of these people feel the effects, and this is quite a few years since that thing, since it came to be known within the Sangha, and then it was published reports. So there's more to the article there, and please excuse my little bit of rant, but it's something that's so unfortunate. But it's also something that can be avoided by simply following the Buddha's teachings and what the Buddha has said about different subjects. It's said that the Buddha gave over 84,000 discourses in the last 45 years of his life. And that number, 84,000, simply means a lot. And he gave a lot of suttas. And almost every one of them was situational, meaning that not every sutta did he go through the Four Noble Truths in the Eightfold Path, because that was his general teaching, and most people had a general understanding. So when situations arose, he would speak directly to that situation in the context of the Four Noble Truths. So this situation arose that there was a very confused town, and he explained the Dhamma and answered their question about how to understand what the true Dhamma is and how to differentiate it. And of course, when the Buddha says those things, such as question everything, he was talking about when he was alive. When you hear the Dhamma and it's not clear, to question him directly. And I know I've said this twice, but again, it's so important. And so the Buddha is no longer alive, but what we have, what we're so fortunate to have, is an authentic written record, the Pali Canon, that we can question. We can refer to the Pali Canon. We can look for the consistencies of the Buddha's teachings that are presented there. But we can also know that the Buddha would never have taught anything, that leads to mindlessness or leads to predatory behavior. If you notice that as part of a lineage, you know immediately that lineage is a false lineage, and it can only lead to more confusion, delusion, and suffering for everyone. And again, just to make a little bit of a speech, if you come across that out in the world in different Buddhist teachings, please speak up. Please don't allow that to continue. You may be setting yourself up against your friends and your associates, and that's unfortunate. But too many people suffer under the umbrella of Buddhism, when in fact there's no Buddhist teachings there at all. Let me finish this on a more positive note. We are so fortunate that the Buddhist teachings are still available to us, that we can actually go to them directly. We can question the actual Dhamma and not question a teaching or a teacher or a lineage that has a vested interest in masking what's really going on in their Dhamma. Or maybe it's just inadvertent. I'm not saying that every non-Dhamma Dharma, if I can use that phrase, is intentionally hurtful. But at best, then, it's very confusing. And most everybody knows my story, and it's on the website. But I spent many, many years bouncing from the Tibetan traditions to Zen and different Mahayana teachings, getting more and more and more confused until I finally realized and finally settled on looking in the Pali Canon for the authentic record. And that's when everything changed for me. That's when everything began to make sense. And that's when the Dhamma actually became useful and effective in my life in helping me to recognize the three defilements in my own life, to fully understand what the three marks of existence imply, and then to come to a profound understanding of what the Buddha awakened to, meaning dependent origination, and that it is from ignorance of Four Noble Truths that all manner of confusion, delusion, and suffering arises. And if we want to end confusion, delusion, and suffering, if we want to end dukkha, that's explained in the Fourth Noble Truth, and that's the Eightfold Path. So that's the end of the talk today. I guess this chat thing still isn't working, but I'm going to figure that out. Kevin, thanks for your help earlier. And I noticed that there's two viewers. If you'd like to contact me, please send me an email through the website. I hope that on this forum I can have a little bit more interaction, but I guess I have to get to know it a little bit. And Kevin, I'll give you a call in just a few minutes. Thank you all for joining me today. Peace. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.